few handouts for today, and those on Zoom, we can have these handouts sent to you. I just pulled these off a few minutes ago, so. Let's see, how do we do this in a COVID safe manner? And it all just splits and goes like this? Well, Adam, you're going to be in charge of that, okay? Ready? This one needs sorting. That's an individual, single page.
This one needs sorting.
Well, this one does. This one actually is ready to go to everybody.
Okay. Would you mind sorting that?
And this one is in separated in batches. Okay. Batches of two. Great. So each one is two pages. We may not actually get this far today. I think we will. But. I could just announce the people on Zoom, eh? Yeah. The answer, Marion, to the question about people attending on Sunday would be those who've attended Dorje Drolo. Received the empowerment of Dorje Drolo? Oh, great. Yeah. Been busy, yes, yeah. Hot off the press. If there's any extra copies, I made 14. If there's any extra copies, I wouldn't mind one. But if there is, no, if there is an extra copy, that's good. Something to look at. That's great. Thank you. You may not need it today. Thank you. If there's extra copies. Got that one? And that one's three pages. Not two. Oh yeah, that's good.
And we're short two or three copies of that.
This? You are, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can give mine.
Okay.
Away,
all right. And some those who've studied Abhidhamma, who've taken the Abhidhamma, of course you'll be quite familiar with this, and you really may not even need you'll have it all memorized. So expect. And there's a copy of the Abhidhamma Sangaha there. If the Abhidhamma Sangaha is there, so I can just quickly look it up. I can print more. Well, while we're waiting, if I could invite the Umzi from Switzerland to lead us, that'd be great. And hello, Eva. Hi, everybody. Just in case, reference. Okay.
The four thoughts that turn the mind from samsara. Mm-hmm. this where everyone is born in samsara, and since a happy existence was never seen, I will enter the path of nirvana. In order for this bodily leisure and wealth to possess meaning, I will abandon the three non-virtuous positive afflictions, develop diligent and virtuous actions, and protect the vows and commitments of the three doors. Going for refuge. Nyaya namo dakshanam kanyam pesam chenam Yogini zomelame jam chumpan Jilla kenjo melama nakyam chi Namgro cho zem yidam nakyam chi Bajje kense kandro lakyam chi Tangi sobo samye akyamchi Jiva jakhe namje akyamchi Tohi jinjo genne akyamchi Rikne gamna jirkyo mela akyamchi. Namo, from now until the attainment of unsurpassed awakening, I and all other sentient beings in equal to space go for refuge to the Guru, source of all blessings. We go for refuge to the Idam, his source of supreme city. We go for refuge to the Dakini, the seller of all obstacles. We go for refuge to the Buddha, the first among humans. We go for refuge to the sublime Dharma, peaceful and free from attachment. We go for refuge to the sound of the supreme field of accumulation. We go for refuge to the Dharmapalas and masters of activity. Namo, from now until the attainment of unsurpassed awakening, I and all other sentient beings equal to space go for refuge to the Guru, source of all blessings. We go for refuge to the Idam, bestower of supreme city. We go for refuge to the Dakini, bestower of all obstacles. We go for refuge to the Buddha, the first among humans. We go for refuge to the sublime Dharma, peaceful and free from attachment. We go for refuge to the Sangha, the supreme field of accumulation. We go for refuge to the Dharmapalas, masters of activity. Generating Bodhicitta. Nyaya korve samchen dunga dandana ching Deva chokam yam paramilanga Vinna tam yom yam pe sen chom ti generate the supreme mind impartial toward us all in order to attain the heart of awakening. In order that we may fully manage the needs of the six realms, we must attain the stage of Buddha in this very lifetime. Therefore, we will be very diligent in his unsurpassed teaching, the path of the luminously clear, much of essence. Hundred syllable mantra, Sattva mantra. Vendra sattho sammaya manupadaya Vendra sattho deno patishto grido me bhava Sutto kayo me bhava Supo kayo me bhava Anurakto me bhava Sarvasiddhi me bhayaccha Sarva karma sucham me chitam shriyam kuru Ah, 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 oh, ah.
Santo Samaya
Anuparaya Indra Santo Veno Vishno Vino Me Bhava Suto Kayo Me Bhava Supo Kayo Me Bhava Anurakto Me Bhava Sarva Siddhi Me Kayasha Sarva Garva Sucham Me Chitam Shriyam Kuru Sato Tveno Padishto Grido Me Bhava Suto Kayo Me Bhava Supo Kayo Me Bhava Anurakto Me Bhava Sarva Sedi Me Kayacha Sarva Karma Sucham Me Titam Shriyam Kuru
Turning to page 6 of the Bodhicitta Vivarana, number 51. The abiding of mind. Actually, I might want to make sure that there's I want to make sure there's some if there are some questions, they get answered up to this point. Anybody have mysterious things that they would like perhaps answered or something given? All pretty clear? Yes.
I just had a couple of like little questions. With number 43, I was confused because it was previously we were talking about how mind, about the intrinsic nature of mind, but then it was on 43, it says, how can they see it as intrinsic nature with that which is devoid of intrinsic nature? So I just got a little mixed up there. I didn't really understand if they were talking about relative mind.
Well, he's really saying... he's really saying if you label intrinsic nature, if you label and you think intrinsic nature is a thing, then it can't be intrinsic nature. That's actually what it means.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's giving it, then taking it away.
Okay.
If you cling to it, we'll take it away. This is what it is. I mean, it's one giant process of removing every last stitch of clinging. Until there's just naked awareness, just complete naked awareness. But there's naked awareness with knowledge. So that's why this is given, because naked awareness stripped free of itself is just naked. But knowledge with that is key. Okay? So this is what this means.
Okay.
Yeah. If you see it as intrinsic nature, and you label as such, it can't be intrinsic nature. And this will and it will continue on like this. Yeah.
Thank
okay.
You.
Any others?
Yeah, I was confused about 31 because I thought you had said that mind it doesn't change place, and that just the experience around mind changes place. And it says that as it divides, its locus is utterly transformed. So I was confused.
If it is mind as conditioned mind, then if it's abiding in a position, it is utterly transformed. It's always moving, on the move.
Mm-hmm.
So let me just give a little bit more thought to that. Even if something abides, so here's a wonderful consideration. If something abides, is it stationary? Is its position fixed? Can any position be fixed? Or is it always transforming? Okay? So it's utterly transformed. So, could you have, for instance, such awareness, a reflective awareness in the present. Could it be in the present? No. It can't hold a position. Therefore, it's utterly transformed.
Okay.
Any time that anything happens which is less than the present, it's utterly transformed. Go take a look at anything and you'll see it's utterly transformed. Nothing, another way of saying, nothing can abide. There's no place. This is another beautiful meditation, actually. If you go contemplate your life and the life of trees and plants, of sentient beings, and then of mind experience, is there any place that you can have as a security, as a place to stand? And this is one of the most important pointing outs, if you wish, of mind's nature. Is coming to experience no place to stand. Lo kutara. Loka, place, place, sphere, world. Utara, beyond. That's the actual name for it. Or anutara. No place that you can stand. Not even for a millisecond. So there's utter transformation in that. Okay? Utter transformation. And yet we imagine things to be steady and still. This even goes beyond transience. There's no place where anything isn't transformed. Therefore, nothing actually is the same. Nothing is what you think it is. Yeah. Even this building is utterly transforming before our eyes. Ground is utterly transforming. The clouds, the sky, everything. Utterly transforming. We're utterly transforming. We just make believe it's not. Any others? Any other mysteries to be solved in the universe? Okay. Number 51. The abiding of a mind which has no object is defined as the characteristic of space. So they accept, the Chittamatrans, accept that meditation on emptiness is in fact a meditation on space. Well, we have to be careful with that translation. Excellent translation, but let's be careful. So when it says no object, it actually means, in the words of Namgyal Rinpoche, no object in particular, which is code for non-conceptual or conceptualist. We have to be very careful with no object. It has no mind, has with no object in particular. Having the characteristic of space. So then we have to consider the characteristics of space. And those who meditate on emptiness meditate, the Buddhists say, on spaciousness. So when it says on space, the texts are very clear. Dzogchen Mahamudra texts very clear. Don't meditate on space. That's a thing. Meditate on spaciousness, on the qualities of space, not on space. Otherwise, you fall into a trap of thinking your mind is space. It is not. Another translation: the abode of a mind that has no support. Well, that's right from the Mahamudra text, beautiful. Has the mark of empty space. These bodhisattvas maintain that development of shunyata is development of space. Development of spaciousness. Development of qualities like space, but not space. The ancient texts are very clear on this point. Don't make space. Allow for spaciousness. Allow the mind to grow into spaciousness. Yeah. Or space-like. So this, then, I would take the time, as one should, to then examine space-like qualities. And one of the most important ones here is actually in part of the translation. The abiding of a mind which has no object. No, that's not the one. Oh, anyways. If you consider space, what is one of the hallmarks of space?
It's vast.
Hmm? It's vast. Vast? But how about this space? How about the space inside here? How big is that? It's pretty limited, isn't it?
Limited. So unobstructed?
No, it's a tiny space. How about a space like this? Is that space really much different than the space in the room, or the space sort of in the sky, or the space of the entire cosmos? What does space mean? The quality is the same. What about the quality?
It's openness. The openness of the quality is openness. It
doesn't have a specific form.
Okay, so here's some, these are things that I would like you, so instead of just saying, here it is, I'd like you to contemplate space and make a list of the qualities of space. Why are they using space? Why do they keep referring to space so much? So make a list. Make a contemplate, reflect, look, and then go, and can you come away with something that is defining characteristic of space, whether the space is a small space or whether the space is a so-called big space? And is there any difference in the quality of a big space and a small space? Just like hollow body, is there any difference between a big body and a small body? What would you say? Any difference?
Relatively, yes. Absolutely, no.
Yeah. Would you say that short, little people are inherently not as good as really tall people or really wide people? What would you say? Or is there an ideal size for a human? I mean, can a human be this size and be human? How small can a human get before it's not a human? What would you say? Anybody? Can a human be this size?
Probably.
Well, when is a human is an embryo a human or not a human? What would you say? When does an embryo become a human? I know there's a major debate. It's a political
word.
But actually, when can you say? When can you say it doesn't have human qualities or characteristics? What makes human characteristics?
It's genetics, right?
Yeah, so it's already got the genetics. All the genetics are in place for a human being, even at the moment of conception. Isn't that cool? But is it a human being? And what size could a human being get to? Could a human being be 30 feet tall? Could a human being be 1 inch tall or 1 centimeter tall? Is that possible? So space, what is it about space that is worth meditating on? Why do we keep referring to it? Instead of just saying, oh, space, oh yeah, I know space, but really go after it, really make it a look in space, right? What is about the space that has the hallmark of a high yoga? What is it? Why is it such a high yoga? High practice of Mahamudra, high practice of Dzogchen. It's probably it. Why? Is it looking into space? What is it? Vast? Small? Could one do it if one was in a little cabin? Could one do this if one was in a little cave? Do you have to be on a mountaintop? Could anybody have realization of Mahamudra Dzogchen, which is full liberation, in a forest? What do you think? Beaver dam cabin? No, not possible. Too small. Hermitage? Tiny rooms. Tiny. So, I think it's possible. I don't know. Do you think we need large poles here? Like really large, like 400-foot poles, and we sit on top of poles like the Christian saints used to do in the desert, these large poles to get like perspective and go, okay, now I got it. What do you think? So I want you to do the work instead of me just, you know. Okay? All right, space. Space, the final frontier. Okay. 52. With the lion's roar of emptiness, that refers to the Buddha's roar of emptiness, all pronouncements are frightened. Wherever such speakers reside, their emptiness lies in wait, like a tiger or a lion hiding in the bushes. If you are a scholar or you are Buddhist scholar, and you're just in that place of trying to get it right, the shunyata is going to get you. So what's going to get you is shunyata. Shunyata is always lying in wait to get those who are in conceptual contrivance. So whoever such speakers refer to the logicians or the scholars who are trying to work this out, which is great. And by the way, working this out is of great compassion. Some of the greatest yogis ever were also some of the greatest scholars, like the great Mipham Lama. You should read their biography in those red volumes. Read the biography of the extensive biography of Mipham Lama of the 19th century. What an amazing genius scholar, but what an extraordinary light being and great yogi. So see the two come together. Let's look at some other translation. The lion's roar of emptiness intimidates the theories of philosophers. No matter what position they embrace, that very stance reverts to emptiness. Whatever position you take, it'll get swept away. This is Nargajuna's great point, is the Majjhimaka point, is that wherever you take a position, you can't find that position. Whatever position you take will be gone underneath your feet. Yeah. All the dogmatists have been terrified by the lion's roar of shunyata. Wherever they may reside, shunyata lies in wait. I think that's beautiful. That's something that should be written on the walls of cabins here at the Dharma Center of Canada, you know, maybe at the entrance. Shunyata lies in wait, or emptiness lies in wait. Just you wait. So whatever fixation you have, it's going to get swept away. And that's a beautiful position to be in non-position. If you're going to be in meditation retreat, is really a beautiful state of unknowing. I'm here not to know. I'm here to unknow, know, no unknow, no, no unknow, no unknow. and keep striving for greater understanding, but also keep loosening and emptying out. So for sure, for all of us, it's emptiness lies in wait. The guru mind is lying in wait for those who hold concepts like Namja Rinpoche on the, which boat was it? We used to call it the Crack of Doom. Krakow, the Polish freighter, the Krakow. And almost every night after we ran out of food on Polish ocean lines, they would serve what we call deadly diamonds. And deadly diamonds were pierogies, which with no flavor in it, just a bit of grease, fat drippings on top. And we call them deadly because we fall asleep right after eating them. And they were diamonds like this. But Namja Rinpoche had developed the art over months of squeezing a lemon and projecting it exactly where he wanted, like a squirt gun. And sometimes what you do is after supper, as we try to work off the pierogies to meditate, he would lie in wait behind the bulkheads of the ship with a wedge of lemon. And he was just skilled, you know. You'd walk through and you're going, lying in wait. It's one of his sports. So here we were trying to loosen up after a meal of pierogies, and he was lying in wait. So the guru of emptiness, if you're unaware. So then, of course, you develop great awareness after that of moving through the ship, never knowing when the guru might pop out. So who's the guru? Shunyata. 53. To whom consciousness is momentary, to them it cannot be permanent. Correct? Yeah. If it's momentary, if consciousness lasts less than 1/100th of a second, right? The Buddha said it lasts, what was it? Like a million times less than the snap of a finger. is a moment of consciousness. It's infinitesimally small. Okay? It's said that only someone like a Buddha can actually get to that degree of awareness, of that infinitesimal duration. So, no consciousness can be permanent. So, if the mind is impermanent, so how about this? If consciousness is impermanent, could the mind be permanent? What would you say? Because you're all deep philosophers and thinkers. If consciousness, which is of the mind, is transient, can the mind be permanent? If you posit a permanent mind, what have you done? You've posited, you've declared eternalism. Does that make sense? All of a sudden you have eternalism. So mind can't be permanent. And you're saying, but. What goes on? What continues? Shunyata. So if the mind is impermanent, how could it be inconsistent with emptiness? See? So mind, if you posit, this is again the Chittamatra, this is a little poke at the Chittamatras from the Madhyamakas. If mind, the self-illuminating, self-aware mind, is now permanent, permanent wisdom, how could it be? You've just made something permanent, which is like an eternalistic position. Okay. Number 54. So it's saying, mind is emptiness. 54. In brief, if the Buddhas uphold the mind to be impermanent, how would they not uphold that it is empty as well? This is very straightforward. It must be empty if it's impermanent. Therefore, as soon as you take the position of an infinite, continuum, lasting, permanent, self-aware mind, you have now created an eternalistic position, which is permanent. And he's saying, bing, you've fallen into the trap of a philosophical position which can't be upheld. Okay? So it must be empty. 55. From the very beginning itself, the mind never had any intrinsic nature. What could the intrinsic nature of emptiness be, do you think? If it's emptied out, utter freedom, what could its intrinsic nature be? Okay, space. What position can space take? What would be the intrinsic nature of space?
No position.
Now, is no position a position? Ah, good. From the very beginning itself, the mind never had any intrinsic nature. That means a permanent nature. It is not being stated here that an entity which possesses intrinsic existence somehow lacks this. So, what do you say there? Does intrinsic existence lack this? This entityness? Does it have entityness? He's taking all the supports away, just like space. By the way, does space, I'll give you some clues, does space have any support? Then you say, yes, airplanes fly in space. Now, are they flying through space, or are they being supported by air? Does a plane fly in outer space, where there's no air? No. So, where is the support for an entity? Nowhere. So there's one of your BS meter qualities that you have to look for. Are you, when you're meditating on the space-like nature of mind, are you holding some position? Are you holding some ground? Are you resting on something that's giving you support emotional. No. Is something giving you support? Okay, are you being buoyed up by something? 56. If one asserts, if one feels, this one abandons the locus of selfhood in the mind. It is not the nature of things to transcend one's own intrinsic nature. Well, he's really demolished this. If one asserts, if you add in on the first line of 56, if one asserts this intrinsic nature, one abandons, if you assert this understanding, I'd prefer that, if you assert this understanding, one abandons the location or position of selfhood in the mind. That's beautiful. Basically, if you give up this position, one abandons the location that the position of selfhood in the mind. It's not the nature of things to transcend one's own intrinsic nature. How could you ever get beyond the absolute nature, to transcend the absolute nature? So he's both using intrinsic nature and demolishing the fixation of intrinsic nature. Let's look at some other translations of this. By speaking in this way, a mind endowed with self has been rejected or demolished. The essence of phenomena cannot be what transcends their very nature. So how can you transcend the essence? This is the point. So if you posit a self-aware, self-illuminating wisdom mind, then are you transcending that which cannot even be defined? Yes. And he's saying you can't do that. He's saying you have to abide in that which is undefinable. So then he'll say, well, if you give any qualities at all, if you give any qualities at all to the nature of mind, the nature of emptiness, have you strayed? Yes. But if you don't actually pick up the qualities, then you probably don't know its nature. Make sense? What could you say about the nature of a banana? The taste of banana. Who here can define the taste of banana? Anybody?
Sweet.
But is that, that also goes for a peach, also goes for a pear, also goes for a ripe raspberry. Anything?
Chocolate.
Hmm?
Also goes through something totally different, like chocolate.
Can you describe
sweet.
Chocolate?
No, I'm adding to your...
But you're alluding to a banana split. That's where you're getting to.
How about we test it?
Okay.
Yeah, good idea. How about we test it?
So how can you define, how can you actually put the qualities around a Chathoui Kem or a fine wine, or a fine Burgundy, a fine champagne, a fine. How can you do that? And yet, if you don't, there's no discrimination or knowledge that you've discovered something. You see? You just can't cling to it. How would you ever describe an apple tree in the autumn with the leaves turning? How could you ever describe that to somebody? You've seen some of the apple trees, eh? All the leaves have turned, these beautiful red apples. How can you describe that to somebody?
I just give them the apple.
But that's not the tree. You can give them the apple, which may have some worms in it. But it's not the tree and not the vision and not the experience. Yes? If you give them the leaf, is that the apple? So which part are you going to give? Let's look at Lindner's translation here, 56. This statement results in abandoning mind as having substantial foundation. It is not the nature of things to transcend their own being. How can you transcend the very nature, the very essence? Can't. So how many gods can you get higher than God? How about a Buddhahood that's fuller than Buddhahood?
That's the ontological argument of God, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't. 57, just as sweetness is the nature of molasses, and the heat the nature of fire, likewise we maintain that the nature of all phenomena is emptiness. So you have to keep on track. All the texts are saying the same thing. Keep on track with discovering and experiencing non-conceptual emptiness. Don't get caught in fabrications. The hardest work in the Dharma is to know you're fabricating. That's the hardest part. You're making up stories. A good teacher has to help you dismantle your stories, not create more. If they're very skillful, you may need more. Actually, yes, you may need more. But before you dismantle, you may need more stories before you take away stories. Okay. And by the way, generation stage is not a story. Just because it's visualization and form doesn't mean it's a story. So what would you say if you bit into an apple and you couldn't describe the taste? Would you say that there's a genuine experience, even though you can't describe the taste? Yes. But if you're being compassionate to lead someone to the same experience, wouldn't you now list the qualities to look for? Okay, let me give you another example. Just arose in mind. I haven't thought about this, but let's see if this works. We have beautiful paths here, right? The Dharma Center? Aren't they magnificent? Have you gone walking on the paths? They're fantastic. Let's say you discover a new path and you're walking around the Dharma Center and you go off the path, the beaten path. I hope you don't. Oh, you might. I hope you do. Hope you don't. But hope you, if you do, you come back because we'd like to see you again. But let's say you walk off into the forest and you know what you're doing and you discover this beautiful, round, pristine lake. Right? And it's just amazing. Utterly amazing. Wouldn't you want to show other people? Let other people know? Okay. So you come back and you say, wow, I discovered this pristine, beautiful lake. It's kind of like a mandala. Yeah? That's amazing. You got to go there. You just got to go there. It's like in another world. It's just blow your mind. How do I get there? Well, I can't really describe that. It's kind of like it's like this. It's just kind of like that. Yeah, but that doesn't tell me how to get there. It's not skillful. So for skill and means, what would you do to help someone find that lake?
Take them out.
More than that, what would you do? You put markers on the trees, yes? And you clear a path and you put clear markers on trees and clear direction of how to find that lake. They still have to find the lake. Is it making sense? They still have to walk the path, but at least you put markers on the path. Make sense? That's what we're doing. But nobody can tell you what that lake is unless you get to the lake. Yeah. So do you see how important conceptual clarity is? It's absolutely compassionate to lay out like a recipe. You know, a crummy recipe can lead to crummy results in the kitchen. But a really clear recipe can lead to very good results. Make sense? And yet going like this, my pancake recipe, I've seen people do that. You know, you want to know how to make bread? I've seen people do that. You want to make bread? Kind of like this. For a professional baker, it's like that. I've watched people do that. Just like that. So, we need to be able to point out the nature of the sweetness without believing that the pointing out is actually a sweetness. Now we come to the the Majjhimaka position. Excuse me, a little bit of after tea throat. Just good tea. When one speaks of emptiness, shunyata, as the nature of phenomena, all phenomena, one in no sense propounds nihilism. By the same token, one does not propound eternalism either. Key point. Nargajuna is covering his tracks. He's not covering his tracks. He's making sure that he doesn't fall into this. He's telling others, don't fall into nihilism and don't fall into eternalism. True experience of emptiness is neither nihilistic nor eternalistic. I got a note from a student a few weeks ago, which was pointing to a nihilistic point of view of emptiness. The more they practice Dharma, the more I can't really relate to people. All this stuff, I'm going, well, I have to say publicly, it's a note, so I didn't have a name on it. That's nothing to do with Dharma. And nothing to do with emptiness, nothing to do with Dharma. It's probably to do with depression. So one has to really know what is true Dharma. 59. Starting with ignorance and ending with aging. All processes that arise from the 12 links of dependent origination, we accept them to be like a dream and an illusion. This refers to one of the key teachings of the Buddha, dependent origination, the 12 links of dependent origination. You have a whole bunch of handouts for this. Chaitasika one is for the volitional factors. The wheel. These are the I've given you on a sutta, which is the most direct sutta, Paticca-samuppada, called the Paticca-samuppada Vibhanga Sutta, analysis of dependent co-arising. And well translated. Okay, 2 pages. So starting from with ignorance and ending with aging is a process of 12 interdependent links. All processes that arise from the 12 links of dependent origination, the Paticca-samuppada in Pali, we accept them to be like a dream illusion. In other words, the processes are not real. The Paticca-samuppada, from the point of view of Majjhimaka, called middle way school or Cittamatra, the links and the process is dreamlike, not real. From the point of view of the Hinayana, and we'll say here Theravadan Abhidhamma, it's all real. It really happens. The point of view of Nargajuna and the teachings of Majjhimaka and so on, it's dreamlike. Okay, let's turn to it. Some of you are familiar with this term and what this means, and others, this is brand new. I'm going to ask, because I'm not going to spend an entire class on this, but I'm going to ask someone who's familiar with Abhidhamma Who would that be? That'd be Laurel, Mary, Marta, Travis, Shalane, Tracy, Patricia. Who else has attended a good long Abhidhamma retreat? So amongst yourselves, without me picking who that will be, you can discuss among yourselves. Or straws, draw straws, or what is it? Paper?
Paper, scissors.
Paper, scissors?
Paper, rock, scissors.
Paper, rock, scissors. Never mind. However you're going to do that is to give a class sometime. You could offer a class to those that aren't familiar, or sit down with them, one or two of you if you wish, and go through the Paticcasamuppada with these in more detail. How's that sound? Because it's going to take some time. Very briefly, the wheel that you have here, this wheel is a summary of this two-page handout of the Buddha's teaching on the Paticcasamuppada. It's like a map. So you have two. Okay. You've also got another handout, which I just made because I liked it. It's great. Is the Upadana Sutta, one pager. One of the most important suttas of the Buddha. Is called the Upadana Sutta, has everything to do with this dependent nature and everything to do with liberation. And everything to do with Mahamudra and everything to do with Dzogchen. Can I have the Upadana Sutta there? Thank you. There it is. For those that have photographic memories. Okay, very good. Okay. Why a copy of the Upadana Sutta? It's linked with the dependent origination. Very simply, whenever there is clinging to a solid form as real, there will be suffering. And when clinging becomes attachment, there's more suffering. And you'll see now, I hope in a second you'll go, aha, I hope so. Whenever there is a solid, real vedana, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feeling of the mind, and you attach to it, there will be dukkha. Whenever there is a perception and it's real, solid, and there is now attachment to it as real and solid, there will be dukkha. Everybody getting the idea? Any of the five skandhas, which is really at the heart of this, okay? Wherever there is attachment to one of the aspects of the five skandhas, which are from the point of view of Majjhimaka and Chittamatra, are simply dreamlike, then there will be dukkha. Okay? From the point of view of Majjhimaka and Chittamatra, all of the elements of the five skandhas are not real things. They're concepts. They're just very deep concepts. Yeah? There is no such thing as an ultimate feeling. It's a concept. All perceptions are concept. They're dreamlike. Making sense? All forms are dreamlike. So, when you have number one on this wheel, when you have number one, which is often translated as ignorance, nescience means no knowing. It's like non-sentience. To be sentient is to know, and nescience is basically a very fancy philosophical Latin term for not knowing or ignoring of. And that's the meaning of the word Ouija. Never. Goes on and on and on.
I'm just going to ask, I was never able to understand during the Abhidhamma how the Theravadan Abhidhamma can consider the four Paramattas as being real, or the 12 dependent links of origination real, when even the name of it is dependent. And as, you know, a real, lasting, permanent entity could not be dependent on something else, so even the name itself negates the permanency, the realness of it. So how do they hold it to be real if they're even naming it dependent?
In other words, how can vijnana be one of the 202 real things as a paramatta? Because it's really useful. And in those days, many, from the point of view of the way the Buddha taught then, it was actually real to cling to those and make great progress in liberation.
Just as a clutch, which I understand, but would not people arrive to that conclusion themselves?
Probably even during the Buddha's time.
Right.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, but I've known people who've never cottoned onto it. If you're taught it's real, it's really useful. It's really high. But if you're told it's real, I've met many people like that, and probably myself too, okay. And then you discover one day, maybe if you're lucky or you receive certain pith instructions, or you go, but I can't find what they're talking about. But you think you're wrong. Because if an authoritative text says that's the way it is, you're not going to disagree with that. Until you get kind of go, but I can't find that. But if you don't work with momentariness, you may not develop the awareness and the capability of a sharp mind to actually see through. So it's actually a very good starting point. Okay? I must say I'm very happy I started with that kind of training and not the other way around. People telling me that things like there is actually ignorance. It's actually a good thing. There really is ignorance, yeah. And then maybe later on you find, I can't find it. I can't find a mind that's ignorant. And you think you're wrong. But it's a really good place to start. Yeah. Okay. So when there's ignorance, now this ignorance is beautiful because when you don't know something, you start to fabricate things. Does that make sense? If you don't know something, you just ask a person a question. So, what is the outcome of climate change for Greenland? It's all going to melt. So we love stories. When we don't know, we love stories, and we love to fabricate. Have you ever felt that? You know, how many people can sit in a room by themselves and not fabricate? What happens to the mind within about 1 second of sitting in a room by yourself?
I'm sitting in a room by myself.
Pardon? I'm sitting in the room by myself. Are you sitting in a room by yourself ever? No, you're surrounded by beings. There's billions of beings in the air. Your whole being is full of beings. A book full of beans, full of beings. You're full of it. No, you're really full of it. But so immediately the mind constructs, because it doesn't really know the nature of this experience. So we always do that. How about walking to the beaver dam? Like pitch black. Oh, there's eyes. What? Oh, there's a light. There's eyes. There's someone watching me. You see? So we fabricate all the time. Fabricate, 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 fabricate. So this is worth formations, samskaras. And as soon as we fabricate, we have subject-object consciousness. And as soon as we have subject-object consciousness, we have appearance, we have a mind, we have a citta, and we have a form, a nama-rupa. And as soon as we have that, we have the emergence of the six bases, the lighting up of the six sensory bases. Then we're able to make contact with sensation, and out of that is born pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral sensation, vedana. And from that, there's the possibility, not for sure, but there will be the possibility when there's now feeling to crave the feeling. Masochist? What do masochists do? They enjoy pain, so they crave to have pain. And most folks, let's say there's not, the majority isn't masochist, but what most of us do, we like pleasure. And occasionally there's the experience of neutral. Okay, with craving, if craving goes on long enough, which may be like 3 or 4 milliseconds or half a second or 2 seconds, then you can see grasping. I will get that book from the library. I want that book from the library. I know that that book over there on the top shelf has all the secrets of Dharma that I could ever want. That's the clinging. But having the book in your hands and getting there and having that book and holding on to it, that is now attachment. Okay? So when craving goes on long enough, then you have grasping, or the usual translation, often translated as attachment. And then from that, there's a becoming. Okay? What kind of becoming? Ideas. New ideas, a book. You take the book to your cabin, it's new arising. You put the book by your bedside to read it, a new arising. You sit there in the cabin like this with the book, and you're now reading it, new arising. You spend all day reading it, new arising. Did you follow how it works? You know, there was one time where I wanted to obtain a skull damaru, okay, skull drum. And through my travels in India and Tibet, I finally discovered a genuine, real damaru. But through the clinging to the idea, to the grasping idea, where I now have this damaru here, you see? Okay. All things arise this way. And then eventually, from the becoming, there's the birth, the physical manifestation. And then because there's a physical manifestation, there must be old age and death. And then the cycle begins anew. So if you look through this patisampada, this analysis of a codependent arising, it is absolutely brilliant, teachings of the Buddha, and it goes through. I'd like someone to for those that are interested and those don't know anything about this, if you'd like to have a class, then please have a class tomorrow morning, and you can organize that and go through this text and help it beings. So he's saying that this entire dependent origination, each link dependent on the other, is in fact not real. It's momentary. Therefore, it is illusory-like. It's illusion. Number 60. This wheel, that is dependent origination, this wheel of 12 links, rolls along the road of cyclic existence, rolls along the road of samsara, of becoming, blind becoming, wandering. Outside this, there cannot be sentient beings. That is, dreaming sentient beings. Experiencing the fruits of their deeds. So at a relative level, he's saying this is actually happening. It's actually happening at a relative level, or as a conceptual, at a dreamlike level. So sometimes you'll see in text that will say dreamlike beings experiencing a dreamlike samsara. Making sense? Dreamlike beings, dreaming minds, experiencing a dreaming samsara, a dreamt up samsara. If if one has karmic activity of body, speech, and mind, there will be fruition. Do you believe it? Do you all believe that? Most people don't. They will agree, but they won't agree. How do you find this out for yourself? Only one way. You have to get microscopically into how things become. Cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect. Right?
You said that unless you have the intention, then you won't be able to achieve what you want.
Or you're grasping. Yes, there has to be intention. Intention, in fact, is karma. So by classic Dharma terms, which I wouldn't disagree with because it's spot on, is whenever there is volitional or intent mind, there will be the setting up of future activity. It rolls emotion. Even if it's very weak. You know how weak activities sometimes happen? You know, it kind of be nice to get a new car. My car's it's not so good, but it'd be kind of nice to get a new car. Okay, that's it for a month. That seed has a way of becoming a bigger seed. I could get a new car. And so on, so on, whatever. And the next thing you know, you're visiting a car lot and you're doing it. That's not right or wrong. Just saying that even a microscopic seed can start rolling and becoming, enter into becoming. So you have a list now of here, 3 pages of 52 mental factors, which are volitional factors, which are karmic factors. Just so you know what we're talking about here. Those folks that don't. This list of 53 in the handout are the major volitional factors that drive karma and the resultant, which is called vipaka. There's beautiful ones, there's occasional ones, there's universal ones, and there's unwholesome, and there's beatific. All right? The first seven are found in every single moment of consciousness. Those first seven. Every single one of them are found whenever there is mind conjoined with an object. And then there's some occasional ones. So outside of these 12 links, in a relative sense, there cannot be sentient beings experiencing the fruits of their deeds. Is that understood? He's saying this is the nature of the dreamlike illusion, is the 12 interdependent links of arising and passing away. This is the dream we're in. So to do this, you have to develop an awareness and a mindfulness and a recollectedness that sees clearly mental activity, speech activity, and bodily activity, and actually has the recollective ability to see how something that is grasped to, something that is a concept, and then becomes an action, leads to becoming, leads to an event happening. Is everybody understanding this? And the way to do that, and I find the Burmese, Thai, Vipassana method of walking very, very carefully and slowly and watching the intervals of stepping is one of the best ways of seeing that, because then you can do it with everything. Okay? You see the mind quality behind the lifting. You see the mind quality and the kind of state behind the result. Yeah. So, for instance, something like this, right? If I'm talking, and the glass fell out, it doesn't happen by accident. It doesn't happen just because it happened. It happened because there's a mental volition behind that. Making sense? I hope. You have to catch what that is. See, without the glasses now, I can't find them. So that's one of the reasons we need to slow down. We need to really slow down so we see where we end up. So there's a beautiful practice you can do here at the Dharma Center of Canada. Or anywhere. Would you like this practice? It's gorgeous, beautiful practice. Something I've done lots in retreat. Just sit here like this. Where are you going to go? Now let's say you didn't have to go for a meal. And you didn't have to work in the kitchen. And you didn't have, let's say you're here in retreat by yourself. And you had nowhere to go. You could go anywhere. You could do anything. You could walk the 400 acres. You could walk to Kinmount. You could walk to Toronto. I'm really serious. You're here for 3 or 4 or 5 months, whatever it is. And right now, there's no schedule. There's no time. Meals have no schedule. Nobody's telling you when to go to bed or wake up. No one's telling you to meditate. What's going to happen? Ever felt this? It's fantastic. This is operating. Exactly, you create something. I need to do the following. And you've got to get to this point where you go, wow, I'm doing the following. Not like, oh, I'm blindly following, but wow, look at this. This is amazing. I'm heading to the main house to go talk to somebody. Not like, oh, I have something important to do, but out of all the things I could be doing in the whole universe, I am now walking to the main house in pursuit of my mind's grasp. It's the most beautiful things you do. You just sit there going, what is going to happen? And this is actually a stage of insight. You start to realize, it's actually number 5, you start to realize that whatever pops in the mind is bloody dangerous because it has the power of karmic, future karmic play formations. Just like this, you know. Where's my car? Getting the car keys. I'm going to Kinmount, to Kinvale to have lunch. Why? Because it arose in mind. That powerful. Ever had that? Those who've been in retreat, completely swept away with one little idea that comes and bowls you over, and you're going, I'm heading for the telephone. I'm going to make that call. No, I'm going down the road. Oh, it's warm out. I'm warming up. Oh, now I'm too warm. Now I'm going to get cold. Now I go for a swim. Oh, I'm gonna, meditation. I hear meditation is good. Going to meditate. No, I'm not going to meditate. I'm going to make myself a cup of tea. And on the way to making a cup of tea, that's an interesting Dharma book. I think I'll read that Dharma book. Oh, no, it's walking meditation. Now I'm walking meditation. I think I'll turn. I'll think I'll turn. Turn, would you turn? Turn the wrong way. Turning. Stopping.
Turn. supper. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. Where am I?
It's truly an amazing thing when you get to this stage. You realize even the slightest thought can set you off for something for the rest of your life. I've got to go and do that. I've got to go and make that call. I've got to, right? And then you've got birthing, becoming, birthing, and then eventually decay, and so on. So this is one of the insight stages of, oh, I should get like that. Oh, anything I do, oh, or anything I think of, oh. So when one sees this, not just as frightening, but actually a dreaming mind creating a dreamscape, now we're talking the illusory mind, independent origination, but actually something a little different. It's creating samsara. It's creating a universe of, in a universe of infinite possibilities and space, it's actually filling space with becoming. It's really something else. Okay, so you might want to take a holiday day and just track where you go in a day and see where your mind goes, but also see where you end up. How'd you get the Dharma Center? The same way. Dreamlike beings, dreaming a creation, and finding them in places and going, what am I doing here? I suspect that most people who've been in retreat here for a while have said to themselves, what am I doing here? Okay, experiencing the fruits of their deeds, fruits of their activities, fruits of mental activity lead to physical formations and beings and birthings and becomings. And when you see it at a microscopic level, it's like boiling rice. It's like this. Now here, as the Buddha said, now here, now there. Now they appear, now here, now there, now here. All over the place. Okay. 61. Just as independence upon a mirror, a full image of one's face appears. The face did not move into the mirror. Yet without it, there is no image of the face. So, is there a face in the mirror? Is there a moon in the water? Is there a full moon in Mandala Lake or in the pond? Is there a moon in there, or what is it? Would anybody here in the room say there's a moon in the water? Would anybody say that there's a face in the mirror? They take a look in the mirror. Would anybody? Oh, not a mirror. Would anybody in this room say that? But a child might, yes? Go, look, there's my face. Do we do that? Yeah. How many of us pick up a picture and go, look, there I am? But what do we do all the time? What are we doing all the time? There's a real thing appearing in mind. There's a real thing out there. It's really happening. What's really happening? What's really happening? No face in no mirror. No moon in no lake. That's what's really happening. So, the face is dependent on the mirror. If you had no face, would you have a mirror? Could you have a mirror with no appearances? Could you have a concept of a mirror without appearances? Can you have a mirror? Can you have a concept of a mirror without appearances? No, they're dependent on each other. And then we'll, I think that's, maybe that's enough for today. Yeah. And number 62, likewise, aggregates, the five aggregates, the five skandhas, recompose into a new existence from dreaming. Yet the wise always understand that no one, no being, no real being is born in another existence, nor does someone transfer to such existence. How's that for Buddhists? Well, he just took away rebirth. He just took away the reality of rebirth. He's not saying that rebirth doesn't happen, just saying that no being is actually having rebirth. Here's another translation. Just so, the wise shall always be convinced that it is through the interlinking of the aggregates that rebirth into other lives occurs, but not that something transmigrates. No thing transmigrates. And I want you to come up with an example of how this happens. 62, here's another one. Just so, the wise must always be convinced that the skandhas, the five heaps, appear in a new existence due to recomposition, but do not migrate as identical or different. Very good translation. What happens when we dream at night, so-called dreaming at night? Do we go anywhere? Yet we can travel huge distances. Can we experience being a new being at night in a dream? Yes. So when one dies and there's a new becoming, is there any entity that's transferring over, or is there an imagining that there's an entity? So why would dreaming be any different than a wakeful experience, and why would death and rebirth be any different? He's saying, actually, you can't have real rebirth, but you can have imaginary rebirth. If all this is an imagination of a conceptual mind, then there's no real death and there's no real birth. No being is actually dying and no being is actually being reborn. I wouldn't say this is the middle of a funeral. When you're getting up to bury or have a memorial for your brother or sister, mother, father, I wouldn't really read this out loud. It would be disturbing. But actually, for realization, it's very important to realize that there's no being going to die. An imaginary being dies and imagines it dies because it has a very strong concept of death, of dissolution. Anybody in the room, you don't really have to put your hand up, but anybody in the room been actually terrified of fainting? It's really, in other words, it's really created almost a panic of losing consciousness or fainting. Is that about right? Yeah, some people, right? What are you afraid of? Loss of you. So what do we do all day is we maintain us against the possibility of what? Dissolution and death. Even if we just temporarily go out. When are we supposed to go out? When are we supposed to actually fade out? At 11 o'clock at night. And when do we reappear again? At 6:30 in the morning or 5:30 in the morning, right? Other times are called naps. And they're allowed. Naps are allowed. By some. But in a retreat center, no. Naps, no naps are allowed in retreat centers. But you go home, you can have naps. Naps are okay to go out, to vanish, and then you hope that you reappear. Cool. Do you know if you'll reappear? You're really quiet. So let's insert some words, just so you're not too uncomfortable. Likewise, number 62, likewise, aggregates recompose, reshuffle around in a new existence. Yet the wise, those with wisdom, always understand that no real being, no real one, no real entity is born in another existence. Nor does a real someone transfer to such existence. And I think we'll just end at 63 here. 63, in brief, from empty phenomena arise. Now, when a baby is born, I really wouldn't advise you, when you're with the parents, to look at the baby and say, oh, isn't that marvelous? An empty phenomena has arisen. Yes. So, in brief, from empty phenomena, from dreaming phenomena, empty phenomena arise, agent, karma, fruits, resultants, that is, and their enjoyer, those that the mind that enjoys, the conqueror, the Buddha taught these to be only conventional. They are concepts. Now they're all here's another translation. To sum up, empty things or shunyata things are born from shunyata things. The jinna, the conqueror, the Buddha, has taught that agent and deed, result and enjoyer, are all only conventional. That's a good place to end it. So one way to come to this is, how many possibilities are there in a given day of what you could do? Just sit here like this. What could I do today? By thought. Where could I end up? You ever had that wonderful wish to walk into an international airport with just a whole, you know, with your credit card, and just look at the flights, potential, you know, all these flights, and just feel, where could I go? Where could I end up? And just simply hop on a plane. Here. Last flight on to Jakarta, Saudi Arabia, London, New York, Colombia, Buenos Aires. Where could you go? And sitting here right now, where could we go? How many possibilities are there? Extraordinary, isn't it? So the dreaming mind, which clings, wants, has attachments, will arise in a dreamlike fashion in new existences, which might be the Tara cabin, the temple, maybe appearing at the Hermitage, maybe appearing at Orion cabin, appearing in the kitchen. Oh. You following? And you really want to feel that. People say, how do I come to this dreamlike experience? You really have to feel what it's like to be dreaming, but it's more than that. It's seeing how the mind dreams up and creates existences and creates scopes and scape and scapes, you know, scapes, spheres of experience for itself. Just go stand in front of the main house here. Where are you going to go? Bathhouse? Do you have to go to the bathhouse? Right now? Adam does. He's got to go to the bathhouse right now. Chorten? Stupa? Pagoda? Union Lake? Kin Mount? Walk on the road? Where? What for? Why? I'm not saying it's good or bad. You follow? So go practice that and see if you come to a dream-like experience. My God. This is just like a dream. The mind could do anything. It could be painting. It could be doing science. It could be having a conversation in the kitchen. Yeah, I've known people who come here and they start a new relationship. And they told me, I came here to have a relationship, to have a partner. I know other people came here to meditate. Other people came for this or that reason. You see? So if you can find any difference from a dreaming mind, please let me know. Write down. Let me know. And I'm not putting a bad job. I'm not saying this is bad. Just saying you have to wake up in the dream and know how the process works. Otherwise, what happens? That's where I'm going to end it today. What happens to you if you don't know? Yeah. Zombie-like powerlessness. You're powerless to actually shape a life of awakening and so on. Yeah, without knowing how it actually works. You're subject to the dream beings and you're subject to your dreaming mind, which may have, by the way, a very beautiful life, but at any given point, it can all come crashing down. And is the point of dreaming having a beautiful life, or is it to wake up out of the dream and have an extraordinary life of liberating beings? So I think we'll just leave it there. The fifth stage of insight.
That's the fifth stage.
Pardon?
That's the fifth stage.
I think so. Recollection is the fifth, but I could change it to sixth. I have to look at something like that. So any questions about that? So go put this into practice. Really feel it. Dreaming mind, dreaming becoming, formations arising, and see how it works. And you'll really come to this. So, no questions. If I could ask the Swiss Umzi, to lead us in a dedication and aspiration. Great.
Yaya namo jokyu
nisu deshe chamden de lama yira chosu sedam shri singu dham ye garwa ramlam pin tam che sen ching ta ga gong su so deng ne dang chen kan yam tam che ki lu ga gi su gi she ge we le ru sum sang pe ge wa ji ye nam do ne yong pe ge wang grim me nam du te chang chu chen po yi su go se che ga we kong pa ta chen ne de she nam ki ngom pa yong zo su ri go ko le tong pe san chen kya De zin ze pe trin le kachin ne Jiten de jin kro ku chu la shu Na jor ge chu begi chu begi chu an shu Yudro kor ve tum na kun an ne Kam ye zo pe sang ge chu
Thank you. So I'll not be giving a class tomorrow. There'll be a wonka for those who retreat at 7 tomorrow, Saturday. That's right, yeah, tomorrow, Saturday. And a class, we'll make it earlier. We'll have the class at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning. All right, 9 o'clock Sunday morning. And that's also so that someone can join us at 9 who's here on retreat. Good. And isn't it wondrous how Michael can transport that voice all the way from Switzerland, mm-hmm. almost at the speed of light, through a fiber optic cable, all the way from Switzerland, going under the Atlantic Ocean, coming up either in New York or somewhere on the East Coast, traveling over here, going through more fiber optic cables, traveling along and possibly through the airwaves, to arrive here and miraculously appear for all of us. Isn't that something? In a fraction of a second. Isn't that something else? Huh? Amazing. Utterly amazing. What human minds can dream up. So, let's dream our way towards full liberation for the benefit of all sentient beings. That'd be good. Bye, Zoomers. See you later. Any handouts that are required for people? Did I take some people's handouts? I can send the PDFs. I wonder where it went.
We could just scan it.
Oh, here we go.
We could scan it. It's easy.
Here's some extras for people. Thank you. That's great. And we can make these available to those people online as well. So, goodbye, everybody. See you. Enjoy. And contemplate dreaming to awakeness or dreaming to another becoming, or a really good becoming. Great joy
to share.
And Shalane, you coming by?
Yeah.